Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. This week, I have fellow Melburnian Gareth Graham joining me. Gareth, how are you doing today?
I am damn fantastic. What about yourself?
I'm pretty damn fantastic too, provided I don't keep tripping over my words as I was before we started recording now.
Oh, you should have left that in. That was good.
Now, for those, you know what? For anyone tuning into this podcast this week, it's probably going to feel a bit weird because Gareth and I have been chatting for a good 15 minutes prior to hitting record and diving into some really great content. And I just said to him then, we should be hitting record on this because this is the kind of stuff that's worthwhile. And Gareth's request was, let's not go over backstory. Let's shoot the shit, as you said, and talk about some of this stuff that we've been talking about, which has been really about mindset and the psychology of success and all those sorts of topics, which is a pretty massive one. You know, Gareth, you've been working as a hypnotherapist now for 12 years.
Yep.
And, you know, you've been on TV as a, you know, presenting hypnotherapy and getting exposure that way, and easily probably one of the most found hypnotherapists in Melbourne. You know, I'm not going to jump into a big, broad question like, how did you get there? But clearly there was some strategy there at the start, or was there? I don't know. Like, I mean,
I don't think there really was. You know, I've had a many and varied job history prior to being a hypnotherapist. I've been a truck driver, a courier, door-to-door salesman, telemarketer, customer service representative, team leader in a bank. But prior to getting into hypnotherapy, I'd spent like 15 years in computing, infrastructure, architecture, solution design. But throughout that whole period of my life, I'd been suffering from general anxiety and social anxiety. I just thought that was how everyone thought. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was, you know, it was a thing. And in that journey, I just tried to change things, tried to fix things, tried to figure things out. And hypnosis sort of popped up along the way a couple of times. I think the first time was I went to a Reiki session, somebody's house somewhere in the suburbs, paid $30, did a Reiki session. But during that session, she did what I believe was hypnotherapy. It was a visualization. And the visualization had a profound effect on me. It changed the way that I thought. And it was like, oh, that was interesting. A few years later, I was in a shop, alternative therapies. There was a CD, a social confidence CD. So I thought, okay, well, I'll buy that. I went home. I listened to it. That was nice. Didn't really remember what was said. And then I was out socially and I started smiling at people, which is something that I hadn't really done before. And I went, hang on a moment. This is a bit strange. I don't normally do this. So that was the kind of the second point of contact. And then I was just on the internet, remember. And then I remember I was with a group of friends and I was talking about hypnosis. And one of the guys who was in the group said, oh, yeah, I've been to all the courses. I've got all the CDs. Here you are. And so I think I started with Igor Ledochowski's original first cut of The Power of Conversational Hypnosis. It was and some Mark Cunningham stuff
over there as well.
It was the first one. So my obsessive nature, I studied it all week. I went out to a bar on the weekend with some friends and I just started trancing people out in conversation. And so it was kind of, it piqued my mind. I thought, okay, this is really cool. What can I do with this? Because obviously, you know, there's that part of trancing people out and that's exciting. Mm. You realize, hey, this is real. This thing works. But it's a question then, well, what can I do with it? How can I help people? And then I just went down the rabbit hole with learning as many different things as I possibly can. I started a meetup group in Melbourne, a hypnosis meetup group, just people who were interested in it. One meeting, a guy turned up. Who happened to be a hypnotherapist, who happened to have, at the time, one of the biggest hypnosis websites in Victoria. Mm-hmm. We got to talking. He said, do you want to see clients? And I said, yeah, I'd love to see clients. He said, well, I'll send you some leads. And so he started sending me leads. So I'd go to my job during the day. I'd see clients at lunchtime. I'd see them after work. And then eventually, after the years went by, my contract expired. I was with IBM at the time, and I'd fallen so much in love with helping clients that I just couldn't go back to computing again. And that kind of started it. So as to why I'm easily found, I have the number one website in Melbourne and probably have for the last...
You do, yeah. You have for years. So last 12. I've been a therapist, you have, yeah.
Look, it's bounced a couple of times and it can... Look, things can always change. The guy I was talking about who I bought the leads from originally when I first started, he was just getting... The amount of leads he was getting was insane because he was playing games with Google. He had he'd gamed the algorithm. And unfortunately, what happened is Google got wise to all the people gaming their algorithm and his website and all the leads just went boom, everything gone. That was it. It died. But fortunately, by that time, I'd established my own website. And I've done it for a few people. I'm a techie as well as being a person who loves helping people with hypnosis. I'm a technical person as well. So I understand sort of nuts and bolts of technology, and that's why I was able to do it and maintain it. It's way simpler than people think, but yeah, there's a trick to it.
You do work across a whole range of different things. I know for a while there you were being seen as a specialist in stop smoking. When you started, how did you come to decide on what kind of niches you were going to focus on?
Look, to be honest, I'm going to be dead honest here. I'm not one of the person who beats around the bush. So, you know, I was just taking anything I could get, to be honest with you. It wasn't a question of, I like working with this or I don't like working with that. I was just getting these leads. People were calling up and I didn't want to say no to business.
Yeah.
And I was still like, love the challenge. I mean, let's face it, you get some really interesting clients, really interesting issues that you never, ever thought.
Would have thought of previously, exactly.
You would never have thought, you know, for instance, you know, one gentleman who all of a sudden got anxiety around his swallowing reflex every time that he would you know, you just get things that you would never, ever possibly imagine. So I really loved the challenge. I really wanted to do as many different things as I possibly could. I guess that over time that has just sort of morphed and changed. I do, obviously, you know, I do a lot of stop smoking clients, and that was one of the things I never used to do when I started. I would never go near any smokers. I just wouldn't go near them, but now I love helping them. For me, the core ones that I tend to do, smoking, anxiety, and weight loss. And to be honest with you, most things in my experience tend to be driven by anxiety.
Absolutely.
It drives so much.
Well, even when we talk about smoking, you know, smoking in itself is rarely ever the problem. There's generally something.
There is lots of drivers. Yeah, for the vast, not everyone, not 100% of people, but significant amount of people. There's usually something else, and it doesn't have to be big. Just some things drive it. So, a lot of things fold all the way back to anxiety. So I find a lot of times I'm doing an anxiety session prior to the stop smoking session, or we're dealing with trauma or anxiety before we actually get to the weight loss side of things. So, yeah.
But in terms of, you know, I imagine over the course of 12 years, your ability, your confidence has gone up as a therapist being able to help people. What were some of the mindsets that you took on during that time that helped to bring about that confidence? Or were there any turning points that you recall that were significant for you in building that confidence and that ability?
Yeah, mindset has changed a lot over the years. When I first sort of got into the therapy side of things, there are a number of teachers who were around, guys like the late Jeffrey Stevens, who were very much about this kind of one session does it all. You've got to do it in the first session, like, you know, and it was really much about that. And that really limited me. I was stuck for a long period of time. I struggled to get over that kind of, I'm going to fix all your problems in one session.
And I think a lot of people start off doing that as well, thinking that do it in one session.
Yeah. And look, here's the reality. Hypnosis is so damn powerful that you can do, and I've done it. I've done it so many, I don't know, lost count of the amount of times I've done something that even I've been surprised at in one session. But that's not everyone. It's not everyone. And so that one session mindset, it limits yourself and it also limits the success for your clients, because you're going to help a certain percentage, but you're not going to help as many people as you possibly can. Obviously, these days now my mindset has shifted. I've got a, you know, I set out a program typically about, for me, it's four sessions. Other people, it may be more. But I think when you offer more sessions to a client, you offer more opportunities for change, and success.
There's a misconception out there in the public, though, about hypnosis being a one session kind of thing. You know, it's that belief that people come in and you put them under, and then almost akin to brainwash out the problem that exists, and then they kind of wake up and there's this significant, oh my God, I'm different moment.
You've absolutely nailed it. It's very true. There's that expectation. That expectation is I deal with that usually on the phone call with the person. I think that's the best time to set that up. Well, you'll say, well, it'll typically take 1 to 4 sessions. I do it as a program. You can do one session if you want to. And some people do. Some people just go, I want to try hypnosis. I just want to see what happens. And you won't really be able to convince them otherwise, and probably nor should you. Let them be the judge. If they do one session, they come in and they go, whoa, that was really good. I'll do your program. Fantastic. But some people just want to try to see what it's like, to have a go at it. But yeah, there's definitely that perception that, you know, it's just going to be fixed in one session, and you're going to walk out and you're going to be a completely different person. I mean, both you and I know how, look, there are some people who do have radical shifts. Like they'll just go, holy crap, I'm a different person. But hypnosis and the changes can be so subtle. The person just doesn't feel the way that they did before. It's it's fascinating. So my mindset has shifted away from that. Well, I'm just going to do it all in one session. And I believed at the time that I was doing it. That was the sad part. I was believing at the time that, and the reason why I was believing is because I wasn't following anyone up. If you do one session and you believe you can fix it in one session, the best way to know if you did is to call that person up or text them in 2 months' time, and you'll soon know whether or not, you know, you did get that result. And that's what I did. I started following people up to see what their progress was, and that's when you get that, oh, okay, maybe I need to do a little bit more than just that one. So, that was a learning process, a shift in mindset for me.
How did you find that at the time? Because I know for a lot of people it might be disheartening to phone someone thinking they've done this amazing one session that's cured them of their ailment, only to find that it hasn't been as successful as what they had hoped. And I can imagine for many people, and I've gone through this myself, there's that disappointment. And often we come back to put that, you know, responsibility on us. I can't have been very good then if I haven't got that result.
What
have you done to move past that?
Because it's we set an unrealistic expectation of ourselves. The unrealistic expectation is somebody has smoked for 20 years. They've been anxious for 20 years. They've been suffering from trauma for 20 years. They're going to walk in and in 25 minutes, that's going to be all gone, and we've just done it with one session. I think that's an unrealistic expectation. It can happen. You and I know that it can happen, but it's an unrealistic expectation on ourselves to think that we're just going to, every time, 100% of the time, we're going to get that. And it's not the case. It's unrealistic. Maybe we've been sold that ourselves. Maybe we've sold ourselves on that idea.
You know what I think it is between you and me and anyone watching this is that within the therapy community, I think we often see a lot of chest beating going on. A lot of people do the whole, you know, here's a testimonial, look how fantastic I am. And I have nothing against anyone sharing their successes. Like, I mean, we should really celebrate our successes. But I also really love those mentors and those leaders out there who occasionally share where things have been a fail or didn't go the way they planned, or they'd forgotten something really important. And as a result, the session didn't go the way they'd thought. And when they shared those reminders for me, it's actually strangely comforting. So it's like, oh, okay, this is an ongoing journey. I'm not supposed to be perfect with every session every time.
Without question, without question. You know, Well, there is no perfect, of course. We understand that's subjective anyway. So, yeah, it's to take the pressure off of ourselves in that learning journey, as it were. Not to expect that every single client, every single session, you're going to get this I'm healed moment. You will get those, but, you know, I've had failures, crikey. I mean, I don't know the failures that I've had because I haven't been able to speak. I mean, I know the successes because, you know, someone will refer someone will write a testimony, but I also don't know about my fails along the way. And undoubtedly I've had them, but you're never going to get 100%. If somebody takes an aspirin for a headache, you're not going to get 100% success rate on the headache going away.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach that's going to work for everyone anyway.
No one therapy that works for everyone. There's no matter what you do, there is going to be a percentage that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the way I've set out my therapies these days. So when I do a four-session program with someone, the first session that I will usually do is my high-percentage move, as it were, the one that I get the most shift, the greatest shift first. If that doesn't work, the second session will then have that next one, and then we'll have that next one. And usually by that sort of third session, we're really getting somewhere if they haven't been moved by those other two approaches. And sometimes you're still not going to get 100%. That's just the way life is. That's the way therapy is. It's hypnosis is not panacea.
I'm curious to know, as someone who's been doing this for 12 years, you know, I think one of the trends we also see out there is that people go and do an endless stream of trainings.
Yeah.
And getting, you know, what they hope is the magic bullet therapy technique that is going to be successful with everything. And I don't doubt that as therapists, we develop a similar kind of format that we would go through for most of our clients. And with that similar kind of, you know, a toolbox of tools that we would have in there. In that regards, you know, are there, in your own toolbox, you know, how do you know when you have enough in there, and you know, what made you decide to go down certain paths of training?
Well, I guess, I've had the benefit of time and numbers of people. Mm. So that kind of helps. The fact that you do something and you see what you test it, you see what kind of reaction, you see what kind of result you get. The thing is, because I'm very results focused, at the end of the day, you need to find out whether you're getting results, whether you're getting a change, whether you're getting a shift over time. So it's been very much feedback. I don't know if I can really give you that answer. I think it's finding a therapy approach that you feel really comfortable with. Mm. There is no one therapy that's going to solve every problem every single time. You know, there are obviously higher percentage moves. There's a couple of percentage therapies that you can work on. But I know sometimes we feel, oh, if I just learn some more, I'll be ready. If I learn some more, I'll be ready. If I just do one more course, if I just figure that one thing out, I'll be ready then. The best way to be ready is to start working with clients. Get yourself a therapy that you're comfortable with. Get a particular issue that you really want to help people with. You know, they talk about specialization. Well, that's something I didn't do. I know when I started, I didn't specialize, but it would be the advice that I would give a person right now. Stop trying to fix every single problem and have a therapy for every single thing like I did. Do as I say, don't do as I do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, specialize in something. Get something that you're really comfortable with working on. Get that therapy, get an approach, then start working with those people. Then that confidence will start to build
from there. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm kind of very open again with my clients, I'm open to say to them, hey, look, I'm not a perfect person. You know, I haven't got everything right in my life. In fact, probably what makes me a decent hypnotherapist is I've probably made every single bloody mistake that a person could ever make in their life. I reckon I've done them all. You know, when a person comes in, they go, oh, I did this. And in my mind, I'm going, yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah.
I have that empathy with people who go, yeah, I get this. I'm not sitting here judging you, telling you how you should live your life. I'm going, I get it. I've been there, but I've also learned from it. And I think that life experience helps feed into the therapy. So you don't have to be a perfect person. It's okay to admit faults, to admit the things that challenges that you've faced and challenges that you've overcome, which kind of leads to me to a point, which is also the thing as a hypnotherapist, it's important to continually work on yourself.
Yeah.
not so much work, is improve yourself. Is if there are things that are, you've got now that are outstanding issues or traumas, find a great hypnotherapist, do the work. It'll really, really help you. It'll also help your clients too. I think it's really, really important that a person does it. And I'm continually working on myself in lots of different ways, constantly having facepalm moments. It's fun. It's figuring out things, changing things, learning. So I would also recommend to build that confidence, work on yourself as well. Mm-hmm. Learn stuff for you, not just for your clients.
I think that's really solid advice because we are, as human beings, constantly evolving and changing over time.
Absolutely.
No doubt our own beliefs and values will change as we continue to explore even the world with hypnotherapy.
Mm.
Hell, even our concept of what hypnosis is may change over time. I know mine has from when I started to where I am now. What I believed back then versus now is very different again. So
absolutely. It evolves over time. I mean, I've got a couple of concepts, things that I think of sort of how it works. And look, some people really want to pull it apart and figure that out. But I always say, like, you don't need to know how an internal combustion engine works to drive a car.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a hypnotherapist, you don't need to know the ins and outs. And to a point, that's why I used to pre-talk for many years. Mm. I used to do this thing of, you know, 25 minutes, what is hypnosis? Over and over. And I just stopped doing it because the clients didn't need to know that. It was irrelevant to them.
We'll do a form of pre-talk, though. So I know many hypnotherapists will say to me that the pre-talk is one of the most important part of the session.
It is. But it's just I don't do a huge talk about what is hypnosis.
Yeah.
You know, I will talk about the you outside of your own conscious awareness. And that's what I like to do. I'm a big fan these days of, you know, buddying up to the subconscious mind, to letting it know that I know it's there. I know that it's powerful. I know it can make changes. That's what I'm more interested in these days, of letting it know that I know, as it were. I found that
it's having a subconscious go, oh my God, he recognizes me.
He knows I'm here. Yeah, he knows I'm here. He knows I do all the hard work. He knows I'm trying to fix this problem, but I don't know how. That's pretty much how I like to do it these days, rather than some kind of an Azure and, as you know, charts and all that sort of stuff that I used to do earlier. Look, the framing up front in your session can be just as powerful, if not more, because you're seeding a lot of stuff, concepts. You're introducing them rather than introducing them into the session while you're doing the hypnosis side of things. Introduce them early. I mean, everything is hypnosis anyway, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But, I find a lot of that pre-work stuff, giving people insight into their mindset, into what's going on, into how things work. So, rather than packing it with a hypnosis lecture, certainly a lot can be done in that first part of the session.
Well, I notice even on your website, you have a frequently asked questions page about what is hypnosis. And I've done similar where I have a video that I send out in confirmation saying, well, if you want to know, here's a video to watch, but we're probably not going to talk about this when you get in. No. At the time, we could be talking about something else. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also just understanding what's going on too, is it's important not to assume too much about what they said the problem is and what the problem actually is. You know, they might say to you on the phone, I want to come in to do this. Again, I want to come in to lose weight. So the person will sit down in front of you. Now you could just go, well, let me tell you about hypnosis and weight loss and just blast through. Or you could start to ask questions to sort of chunk down, as it were, to find out actually what's driving it, what's actually happening here, rather than assuming. You really then start to understand what's going on with that person. And then you can do a better therapy, and then you've got a greater chance of success. I think, you know, that pre-talk, talking beforehand, not assuming anything, finding out more about the person, how they're thinking, can really improve your overall results and your overall confidence.
Who were the biggest influences on you when you were, over the course of your career, not just when you were studying? You obviously mentioned Igor earlier before, and you know, he's always a very charming man to listen to. He's incredibly knowledgeable. Are there other figures within the industry that you feel have really impacted on how you work?
I don't know. I don't know really. I just think I always joked that my My form of hypnosis or therapies were kind of like mixed martial arts. It was just pull a little bit from here, pull a little bit from here, a little bit from here, whatever works. You know, I've still got stuff that I learned from Jeffrey Stevens, the late Jeffrey Stevens in there, you know, as far as his induction.
Because he did the gray room, I think it was. He had a few different kind of protocols that were.
For me, it was more about the induction side of things than his therapy. So I started with his therapies very early on. Mm-hmm. I moved away from the therapies, but I kept his induction. Not all of his induction, but I changed and modified it. I really liked his structural approach to it. He had a clear structure for sessions, and I really liked that. He mapped it out. But, yeah, so that's what I took from him, as it were. I mean, these days I mix it up. I've got my own stuff that I've developed. I use quite a bit of content-free stuff these days too. I found that to be quite beneficial with my clients. But, yeah, I've just got a grab bag of stuff. But influences, it's just been different people at different times I've just cherry-picked out. And just random stuff that I've listened to, even random hypnotherapists whose recordings that I listen to. Yeah, because we go mad just downloading stuff.
Yep.
And I would listen to hypnosis recordings. They were just really, really fascinating. I don't know if you know that hypnotherapist, and I can't remember the person's name, where he did this thing called parallel. It was like a parallel hypnosis. So what he would do is he would record two stories.
Okay. And play them simultaneously?
Simultaneously. And every so often the stories would join up and it would make a hypnotic suggestion.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that really is in some way. Well, the purpose of that is a couple of things. Obviously, that causes confusion, which is brilliant for the conscious mind kind of go, too hard, puckering off while the unconscious comes in. But it's also bilateral stimulation as well. I don't know if this is the person. I know Paul McKenna. In the UK uses that technique a lot in his recordings, and largely because I think Paul McKenna was a radio announcer for many years, and so his awareness of technology in the studio was probably so much more advanced than a lot of other hypnotherapists.
I want to jump in because that reminded me of a point that of building confidence. It's the developing of the voice. For hypnosis, I think it's one of the really important areas to work on. I think one of the things that set me up well, strangely enough, to do hypnosis was that I spent quite a few years as a customer service operator when I was a young guy on the phone. People used to joke I had a phone voice. I'd start, "Hello, thank you for calling."
It a soft and submissive voice. I the same thing. It's almost like a "Hello, Lawrence speaking. How can I help you?"
So I think that helped me. But there's a cadence, there's a smoothness, there's a certain tonality. One of the things that Igor Ludovsky, in one of his somewhere along the line in one of his trainings, was he was saying one of the best things that hypnotherapists can do is to learn acting, and I would say particularly voice acting. There's certainly so much that you can do with your voice to help the experience with a person, such as he used this term, squeezing the emotion out of a word. And I don't want to go into a kind of a training session about it, but really squeezing the meaning. So when you say a word, you have that meaning in the word. It's like that word, relax. You know, you talk about squeeze them, but really give that word the meaning. Because clients' eyes typically are going to be closed. Really learn to take them on that journey, give them that meaning, that feeling with the way that you're speaking. So really getting comfortable with speaking, getting it really perfecting your voice. And I think the other words is staying calm. And we talk about confidence, it's being calm and relaxed. And that this jumps back to a thing that the conversation you and I were having before we came onto this recording was about letting go of this certainty. Knowing that this is what's going to happen. The reality is in hypnosis session, when you're working with real life people, things don't always go to the book.
No.
They won't always. They will come up with a question that stumps you. They will be in hypnosis and they will start doing something that's really weird.
Yeah.
You know, I've had
one, isn't it? You've probably had a couple of gigglers in your time.
People who laugh before they go into hypnosis.
Yeah, that's uncommon.
It's really common. I've had people sitting in a chair, swinging left to right while they're in the chair. People doing like arm movements. People may start to cry and you think, oh, no, they're crying. But when they come out at the other end, you say, I noticed you were crying. They go, yeah, I was so happy.
Mm.
You know, there are just things that the questions are going to be asked. You just understand that that's okay. You stay. It's becoming comfortable with that level of uncertainty, knowing that no matter what happens, you're going to be able to handle it. You're going to be able to deal with it. If they have a question you don't yet have an answer for, you go away, you find the answer to that question. So next time it gets asked, you know what to say to that person.
I think that's where self-reflection as a hypnotherapist is a really vital and valuable tool as well. To be able to sit down at the end of your working day and go, what did I do well? What can I improve upon? And to get that self-learning is really important.
For sure. Using the tools that we've got for our clients to improve ourselves along the way.
I think also just having, I know that for some people, particularly if we're going for more of a direct hypnosis approach, there can be that fear about going for it
and
doing it. There can be that fear about, you know, suggesting to them that they will not be able to open their eyes and to try and find that their eyes can stay shut. And you know, I encourage anyone, there will be people that open their eyes. That's okay. it's just about accepting. It comes back to what we're saying before about sometimes things will not go the way you plan.
Yeah. And you get used to it. If you have a particular thing and they don't follow along, then figure out what you're going to say when they don't follow along.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's okay. But if you sit there going, oh, it's going to happen 100%, they're always going to follow me 100% of the time, and you have no contingency, then sure, you're going to be surprised. It won't always work the way that you want it to, and be okay with that.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely fine. You will figure it out. There's always a way of utilizing whatever happened. You know, if you talk about the word
of Ericksonian hypnosis, so you might as well get used to that concept.
You utilize everything, you know. So come back to that thing you were talking about before, people giggling or laughing.
Yes.
And then you say you can just go, that's fine.
That's right. The more the deeper you go into that comfortable state.
Exactly. So many people they'll laugh and they'll giggle right before they go into hypnosis now. You know, whatever happens, it doesn't matter. You might have somebody all of a sudden who has a coughing fit in your session. That's okay. You can stop. They can have a drink. You can put them back in again, or you can let it subside and continue onwards.
In my clinic room, I have my business partner next door, lovely Joey Buzzardle, has these Tibetan bowls that he'll often play at the very start. And anyone who's experienced them will know that the vibration, the sound from them is consuming, to say the least. And I was halfway through a session and he started playing the bowls for his client in the next room. And I quickly had to utilize that. As you hear the ring.
That's right. You find yourself drifting deeper and deeper.
Find yourself just going, right, I'm going to take this and we have to run with it, because you can't control these things. So
It's absolutely fine. You don't break hypnosis. That's the other thing, is like, just because something interrupts it, nothing gets broken. It's just continuing on something you can use. That's fine. We just keep going. This is normal. It's not an issue. And it isn't. If you make it an issue, it's an issue. If you tell them it's not an issue, then it's not an issue. They don't care.
Does this come back then to self-belief? Because, you know, I'm hearing that and thinking, you know, the unconscious mind is really good at picking up cues that we may not consciously notice. And if you are incongruent with what you're delivering, does the other person's unconscious mind take that and kind of go, hang on, something's not right here, or something?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. When we're in that protective mode, we're looking for incongruences. If I said that word correctly. It definitely, it does develop over time, but certainty, you know, I have this, for working in the corporate area for many, many years and having been a part of many meetings, you'll know this too. Something said wrong with confidence is better received than something said correctly meekly.
Yeah.
If I can say that correctly. In other words, so I've been in so many meetings where somebody has just said something completely wrong, but they've been so damn confident about it that everyone nodded their head in the meeting. And then I'm like thinking to myself, like, no, it's just, that's a really bad. And other people have this really great idea, but it's like, oh, I think we should do this. No, they get rolled over. Now, I'm not suggesting you should say things outrageously wrong with confidence, but confidence plays such a big part. That delivery with certainty,
yes,
that this is how it's going to be.
I know that Freddie Jackman I had as a guest on earlier on in the series, and in one of his trainings, the very first training, he says you have to learn how to put your own doubts aside. As soon as I got him, I was curious to say, well, just how do you do that?
How's that working?
How'd you do great that? To be able to say that, but unless we have a technique or an idea. And I'm pretty sure that his response was, you know, there was, to paraphrase, there was an acceptance that things weren't always going to work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you don't try your best each time. You just accept that sometimes they're not going to get the result you want, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's really interesting how as hypnotherapists, we don't necessarily access the one tool that could help us change the most, hypnosis. You know, we don't get hypnotized enough to make these changes. If you want to change, if you observe a change or observe something that needs to be changed, seek out a hypnotherapist to change it.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things that can be done. I mean, these days I've kind of got my own tools that I've worked on, which are little refinements and little techniques that I've got. But along the way, if you're a hypnotherapist or a person studying who wants to be a hypnotherapist, seek out other hypnotherapists. Seek out people who've been through the process. They can hypnotize you to make the change.
It's not like there's a shortage of Facebook groups, including my own hypnotherapist networking group, where you could jump in and say to people, is anyone up for swapsies?
I would go one step further. You know, I think people who are watching this and who perhaps don't yet have that confidence, and then to seek out someone exactly like yourself, do some sessions, because it can be. We know hypnosis works quickly. The barriers, the blocks that you've got right now, boom, they can be blasted away. I know. One of the things mistakes that I made along the way is I probably tried to do things too cheaply. I penny pinched along the way in that I didn't put the money up to pay the right people to get the help that I needed, and it took me a lot longer than it needed to. I think it's okay to spend a little bit of money. Seek out a right person, do some one-on-ones with those people, whether that be a therapy. A particular therapy that you want to learn, get some mentoring from that particular person, engage that person. Look, I know some people, money's, you know, not flying, growing on trees. It's important to be prudent about, you know, where we spend our money. But you could spend years trying to figure things out, and then all you needed to do was to get the person who designed the therapy, put the therapy together, sit down with them in a room or online for an hour. They can answer all of the questions that you have, solve all of the problems that you've come up against, and all those issues are gone. You could be slaving away trying to figure them out. So
just to give you an experience of it as well. Like, I mean, experiencing it is going to give you a very different relationship with something than just having a philosophical idea about it
Without question. I mean, hypnosis is very much a doing thing. You can learn as much as you want to, but it needs to be a doing thing. But sometimes those questions don't get answered in a downloadable course, or they don't get answered in that one particular thing. A discussion that you and I were having before we came on here today, which sort of spurned what we're talking about today, was the concept of stock market day trading. And it was one of my hobbies and one of the things that I'm really into at the moment. But one thing that I've done very early on is I found a mentor, found someone who is a professional day trader who can mentor me. And that was a mistake. I didn't do that when I was younger. I didn't do that when I started with hypnotherapy. I would have been better served, find someone, say, like yourself, who can either hypnotize me to make the changes I need to be made, or to, you know, to go and work with someone who developed that therapy and answer, get asked those questions, engage with them. You'll save money and you'll save time. There's no question.
Absolutely. I agree. I can't thank you enough for your time today, Garrett. It's been such a really engaging conversation. And I doubt there's anyone out there who's listened to this and who hasn't got at least a couple of nuggets of gold there to walk away with and to consider. If people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Oh, gee, I'm on Facebook, of course. Just reach out to me, friend me on Facebook. Call the business number. You can always find me. He doesn't want to be found. Just message me. Just reach out. Well, I mean, that's the only real way. Just hit me up on Facebook. Message me via my website, the hypnotherapistmelbourne.com.au website. I always love to chat.
I always love to in Melbourne, I have to say. You know, obviously it's one of the most envied URLs. So
yeah, I'm always around. You'll find me if you want to talk to me. But I don't really have any other way. No point is giving out my phone number.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for watching. I guess we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Thank you for watching the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. I'd like to invite you, if you're on Facebook, to come and find us on the Hypnotherapist Networking Group, particularly if you're a student or even if you're a seasoned hypnotherapist. You'll find a whole lot of information there regarding continued professional development that will help to build your confidence and effectiveness as a hypnotist. Come and join us. I look forward to seeing you there.